In this episode of Tech Lounge, I speak with Theed Loader of Rewarded Interest. Another project, there's been several of these throughout the years, that looks to help you monetize your data as you browse the internet. And their approach is via cookie banners and consent preferences and how you can use those to earn rewards as you browse. Now, quite a few people have tried this over the years. So Theed and I discuss rewarded interests approach and how maybe it's different. It seems appropriate that instead of having an advert on this episode, I instead maybe mention some of the other ways you can support me and the show. If you head on over to christianchiller.com/support, you will see links to my Patreon, my Ko-fi, and many other places where you can just show your appreciation, which in this current market is highly appreciated. The name of the company and the product is sort of interesting one. It's Rewarded Interest, which sort of sounds like I'm about to start into maybe a sentence or something, but it's the name of the actual product. What is it?
Well, what Rewarded Interest is, it's a company and a product, right? So our company name is Rewarded Interest, and our first product name is Rewarded Interest. And at the moment, we've deployed through Chrome, right? Mm-hmm. Through a browser extension. Mm-hmm. Eventually, we will be on other platforms or devices that a consumer uses. For example, we have an iOS mobile Safari port coming out in Q2. So our goal is to be wherever a consumer is so that we can represent the consumer's interests and intent around their privacy and whether or not and how they wish to be or to receive personalized ads. Mm-hmm. So the Chrome extension is what we call it a personal consent agent. And our job and our platform represents the consumer. And as you browse the web, and especially in Europe, you know this, as you go from site to site, by law, you know, under GDPR and the e-privacy directive, many, many websites are required to get permission before they track you for the purposes of marketing and analytics, and before they store any information on your device, like, for example, a cookie. And so, a little context in terms of the terminology, but there's a cottage industry, and it's, you know, there's easily 100 companies out there who produce and manage something called a consent management platform, or a CMP. And that is the software used by a publisher or a brand to obtain those permissions. And we experience them as cookie pop-ups, cookie banners, and probably people have heard the concept of consent fatigue. So the simple answer to what Rewarded Interest does is it helps consumers get rid of consent fatigue and increase consumer confidence that their privacy choices are going to be respected.
Yeah. So when I first saw this, it reminded me of a couple of things. So I wanted to get an idea of where you were coming from in this sort of market, because you've got a mix of existing products, I can see. So
sure.
One, skip cookie banners. I've been for, a lot of browsers sort of have this built in, depending on the browser. There's also things like, I think this is a very EU-focused one. Consent-O-Matic is another one.
I think that was produced at a university in the Netherlands, correct?
Possibly. Okay. It's definitely an open source project.
Yep.
But it works fairly well. Also things like, to a degree, things like Stop the Madness and a few others of these that do that side of things, the sort of privacy side, I guess, the privacy, the automating, the consent fatigue, that kind of things. Then on the other side of the reward mechanism, there's things like Brave. I'm not sure if Brave is even still doing that kind of its own custom ad network, but it was at some point.
Yep.
And you've kind of combined those few things. So firstly, where do you think you fit in to those, that sort of mixed market. You have the privacy people, you have the people who want advertising on the net to be something better.
Yeah, I'd say, where do we fit in? I mean, I guess our aim really is to do all of those things better than the rest of them do. Right. Okay. So, for example, there are extensions out there that can express global privacy control. Mm. And when you install that extension, that's what it does. It turns on a binary, as in on or off flag, that emits global privacy control expression. So when a user navigates with their browser to a website, the browser, through the extension, says, don't track me, don't sell my data, right? We include global privacy control in our extension.
Okay.
But it's not enabled necessarily for every single site. You can actually turn it on a site-by-site basis. Mm-hmm. Let's say in the context of Consent-O-Matic. So Consent-O-Matic has, I think, two goals, and we share those goals. So one is reduce the automation asymmetry and the consent fatigue that consumers experience while navigating the web, right? So make those cookie consent banners go away. I believe in some cases, Consent-O-Matic will also try to express the user's consent choices in a varying degree of richness to the consent management platforms that are integrated into the publisher websites. We want to do that in spades. So we will communicate directly with a CMP if we have a direct integration for it. We will express GPC if our user has chosen a particular consent policy that means GPC. And we also publish via something called the Transparency and Consent Framework. Mm-hmm. And we will soon do another one called the Global Privacy Preferences, GPP.
Okay.
And so our goal is we don't, you know, the open web and a lot of good quality content and a lot of publishers depend on a good and durable and verifiable record of consent in order for their revenue to come into the business. If they don't get consent, the only kind of ad they can serve or they can arrange to be served is a context aware ad or a contextual ad. And that's just, you know, if you're looking into how to make the best bratwurst on the grill, you know, there might be a spatula or something that you need. And if you're reading an article about grilling brats, right, then you can place a spatula ad there. And you know, ideally, you're going to connect with your audience. But that doesn't support any of the use cases which otherwise require a user to be known at the time the ads are being placed. And so our goal is to enable advertisers to get consent if the consumer's okay with it. And that means the publisher actually gets better revenue because a targeted ad costs more and it delivers better than an untargeted ad. So you could say we're publisher friendly.
Yeah. Well, let's dig into that side, because I think the consent side of things is maybe something that is, you know, if you're that kind of person, is a little less of concern. Okay. We'll come back to some further discussions in a minute. But actually, it's interesting because you don't really say advertising, you say earn rewards, which is a different sort of wording. But so what does that look like? If I go to a web page that's full of ads, are you blocking them and then replacing it with your own, or?
No. And in fact, you know, both ad blockers and some other browsers do that. They say, you know, you've got a really nice publishing business here. We're going to block all of your ads, and then we're going to resell that ad space and we're going to take the money. Or they're, you know, in other words, those guys take the money and they essentially rob the publishers of the revenue that they could be getting.
Yeah.
So our goal is to enable the publishers to sell their existing inventory through their existing channels, but to have a durable ID that the consumer has said, I'm willing to be tracked and targeted because it's happening with my consent, right? And also we get higher opt-in rates. So because there is an incentive with rewarded interest that some people will appreciate, which is, oh, I'm going to allow advertisers to track and maybe give me targeted ads. But in order for them to do that targeting, they have to pay me to access my identity.
Okay.
So kind of back to how it works. When a user has, when they've, our members, right, our consumers, when they install rewarded interest into their browser and very soon into their iPhone, when they navigate to a website, if we have permission to do so, we publish an identifier that looks to those websites and to their partners, like the publisher's partners. That ID looks an awful lot like a cookie. In fact, it behaves almost exactly the same as a cookie would today. It's stored and handled differently on the it's embedded into our extension. It's not part of the browser. It's not stored in the cookie store, but it's passed into the opportunity to bid, called a bid request, that goes out for auction, and that's what advertisers eventually use to place their ad.
And are you pitching to publishers or to ad networks or both?
Ad networks, yes. Okay. Publishers don't need to do anything to get the benefit of this. So when a rewarded interest user shows up, the extension simply makes that ID available. And then when that ID is used, the way it works is this. Only partners of ours who have agreed to our contract terms and privacy requirements, only those demand side platforms, the buyers of actual media, they can only decode our ID if they have kind of the special keys, the special sauce. So to every other demand side platform or would-be buyer of an ad out there, our ID looks like a random number that changes every time one of our users visits a property. So essentially, the rewarded interest constituency, our user base, is untrackable to anybody unless they have agreed to pay our consumer when they use that ID to target. Okay. So you could think of us as a buying consortium, or we're like, another way to think of it is we give bargaining power. So we have like collective bargaining. Yeah. We've built the platform. As soon as our audience gets big enough, the demand side platforms have said, yeah, even though we have to pay to reach this audience that you've built, we're going to make it up in spades because the value of the inventory that we now buy is so much more valuable to our advertisers. Basically, they're going to make more money. The publisher makes more money. The ad networks make more money. And the consumer now gets 5% of what the actual media placement cost was.
And I suppose you offset that 5% loss of revenue by saying that, well, we have found that our users, our customers will convert more highly, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. And there have been many compelling studies, kind of at scale with great statistical basis that shows a consumer. Really, so I should say it this way. The advertisement that can be targeted greatly outperforms untargeted ads to the tune of like 50%.
Yeah.
So if a rewarded interest user shows up on a publisher website, that publisher is going to make more money. Okay. And in fact, they're going to make more money even after everybody else in the value chain gets their little bit and we share with the consumer. So basically it's win-win-win all the way down the value chain.
Okay. And I'm assuming or guessing that to get this to work, I would have to probably disable or configure some other privacy settings I may or may not have enabled in my browser or other blockers and things like that.
Yeah. So if you had, for example, an ad blocker installed, we're probably compatible with it in that we won't conflict with it. Mm. But if no one's able to deliver an ad to you, then you're probably not, your ID and that opportunity to place an ad probably isn't going to be bid up very high.
Yeah.
And the rewarded interest ID is probably not going to be used. Right. And that's the way it should be. Like you don't want advertisers having to pay or paying to get an ad in front of a consumer only to then have it blocked. That would be bad for everybody.
Yeah, for sure. Just sort of checking that that's probably an assumption there. Yeah.
Oh, and I should say, a point of differentiation back to your first question is we don't block ads. We are not an ad blocker.
No.
And we don't want to be harmful to publishers or ad networks or anybody in between.
Yeah. And before we dig a little bit deeper down this path, are there, like, where can I use this? Is this only available in the US, or can I, you know, is it compatible with other European directives and things like that at the moment? I
suppose aside from talking, reaching out and talking with various ex-regulators, from the CNIL, the CMA in the UK and others, kind of early on about 2 years ago when we were delving into this, we were like, okay, how does this check the boxes? Or how do you, how would you react to rewarded interest being available, right? And unofficially, and no one can go on record with this, what we heard from most regulators was, this is great. This is what we're trying to achieve. Yeah. You give, you provide transparency to consumers. You help them become better aware of their consent choices because they're having to deliberately install an application or a thing to express consent for them.
Yeah.
So you're not hitting them and putting up a dialogue in their face at the moment they're trying to do something else.
Yeah.
Which is not going to motivate people to really carefully consider their privacy choices. So we time shift that so a consumer can really think about it. They go through our onboarding flow, make some deliberate choices, and then those choices are then applied.
Yeah. Okay.
So
So the next question on whenever we talk about tools like this that revolve around privacy in browsers, and you mentioned what sounded to me almost a bit like a public-private key sort of pairing of the on the identity side. You know, with other tools like this, they may be open source. They may be something that I, as an informed consumer, could go and dig around in. Why should I trust you? And okay. How can I trust you?
Well, that's a great question, first of all, right? And there, I say that because ad tech is kind of either not known about it at all, or it's known about and disliked by many. And the industry hasn't been too forthright about what it's been doing with consumers for 20 plus years, right? So it's a swamp, right? And I will say we are different, right? There's nothing about our model and the way we deliver for consumers that we actually have to hide. So, you know, this has been a nice thing about LLMs and how they kind of scrape the web. And so we've put out a lot of detail about how the sausage is made in digital media, right? Digital advertising and how identity works. And then we explain, here's how we fit in. We block all of the other identities that don't pay the consumer anything. Okay. So it's kind of like most consumers have a target on their back, like a piece of paper stuck to it with tape, right? And they don't know it's there and they can't take it off. So what our extension does is it blocks all of those other forms of ID. And so the only ID that's available at that point is the rewarded interest ID. And that's only available to our partners who have said they are willing to pay when they use it. So essentially the consumer gets a monopoly in the ability to be identified. And they can therefore trade that, in essence, or charge rents to ad tech to be able to identify them at the time ad tech wants to place an ad.
Okay. For a kind of, I know this is probably a broad question, but for like a general user looking at a general amount of web pages, like what could someone expect to be getting per month?
Okay. So before I answer that question, I have to say something else, right? Which is we have a two-stepped value proposition. So we need to achieve critical mass of users. So we'll be announcing soon some special programs or an incentive program for, say, the first 100,000 or 50,000 users. Because once we get to a critical mass, and several demand-side platforms have said, when you guys get to 50 or 100K users, we don't know what, right? Meaning somewhere in that ballpark, we don't know. If we have 1 million users, every DSP is going to buy to reach our audience. Okay. Somewhere, you know, long below that, demand side platforms will start to buy and to reach our audience. We're in phase one. We are growing our audience. And so the value proposition today is very well suited to people who are busy online, mm-hmm. who do research, visit a lot of websites, you live in the EU, where every website they go to has a cookie banner, right? Or a cookie pop-up. So the value proposition is we make the experience of being online and going and visiting and researching things much better because those cookie banners just all go away.
Yeah.
Okay. We also block all of the trackers, in other words, cookies, that are otherwise tracking you without your permission. So immediately we are more private and really more accurately private. Mm-hmm, so if you think of the trouble with the word privacy, I find is that it seems sort of binary, right? You either have privacy or you don't. Yeah. In fact, there's shades of gray that really have to do with your privacy preferences. So we make sure that shade of gray represents your particular choice or your set of choices. We block the unwanted trackers. We enforce everything else. And then we express your privacy choices in a way that publishers can read them and they can still get as much as you're willing to allow done according to what they want to accomplish.
And there has been a kind of a long-term promise of this like control and monetization of your identity. It's never really been quite realized because usually it's too complicated. Or the fact is most people, despite what is said, don't actually care.
Yes.
Or they don't offset the care with the inconvenience or the convenience or whatever it may be.
We feel that if made convenient, right? I think GDPR and the e-privacy directive, you know, of nearly 10 years ago, was well intended, which is consumers need to have awareness and they need to provide informed consent.
Yeah.
And I think that is absolutely correct. The way that the industry chose to do it created automation asymmetry and, quote, death by a thousand cookie banners.
Yeah. Right? 10 years ago was a long time in terms of the internet, I think, as well. I think people would make different decisions now, maybe.
And so we feel like this can be a solve. We can solve this problem, right?
Yeah.
The consumer has an agent. It represents them. They say, here's what my choices are, once, twice, maybe a few times different for a specific site. And then it just works, right? And it's durable. It happens on arrival on any property they go to. I realized I didn't answer the other half of your question. So you had also asked, what's realistic for a consumer, let's say,
I also forgot that I...
Okay. So, and I got off track there. So we, you know, the short answer is, actually, I'm going to give the longer answer than the short answer. The longer answer is, it depends, because digital media and ad tech and advertisers, they don't want to pay a lot of money to reach people who won't buy their product. They also will be more selective. Selective is not the right word. They'll be personalized. So a family that, let's say, brings in a much higher income and has a different set of tastes, they may be valuable to steer towards a certain set of products and services. So a household and the members of that household will receive compensation as a function of the price of the ads that they see, which basically means a wealthier household is probably going to receive more ads at a higher price point to try to steer that discretionary income so that those marketers, those advertisers make their margins. Okay. So long-winded to say is to say a household without a lot of discretionary spending is probably not going to have the same set of ads put sent to them. And they're not, and the advertisers aren't going to spend as much to reach them because there's less to get out of it, right? Yeah. Or they're buying different products. So we will see a range of how much money a consumer will get each year. It could be maybe as little as $15. It might be $200. Okay. For like a dual income household, right? That's in a very high income bracket. In no case, really, unless there's fraud, and we're going to do our darndest to make sure there was not, right? Nobody should be getting rich renting out their ID and allowing personalization. You get the benefits in other ways. You're going to get a little bit of cash. You're going to feel like, hey, I've got a say in the matter now. I'm not being taken for granted, and I'm not being robbed of my right. And I'm going to feel safer. So I think consumers will be more confident and happy with the bargain. They're going to feel more in control and they'll be more in control. And they get a little bit of money on the side.
The skeptic would argue that because you're getting higher conversion rates, that 200 that they've just made, they've probably spent on products. But but still, I mean, this is always often something that came up when I was on Instagram. I kind of came off of it. I would get served a lot of very relevant ads. And there was a certain point where I was like, well, but I don't actually mind them.
We did a focus group with about 45 undergrads and it ran the gamut. So, you know, there was a group of people who said, I go out of my way all the time to say no on every cookie banner. And yeah. I've installed blockers and I toss my cookies, you know, once a month or whatever to get rid of all the trackers. Right. So we call those privacy actives.
Yeah.
Right. And there was definitely a group of that. There was another group, which was probably the majority in this case, because this is a university setting, where they said, yeah, I'm deliberate about when I disclose things and when I don't. I always think mm-hmm. about my privacy and I think about where is this contact information going to go if I'm disclosing it. And then there was another group there, the third group, who basically said, I don't care about any of this stuff. I know everybody's going to track me and target me and I don't feel like I can do much about it. And really, that's a shame, right? Because mm-hmm. people should be empowered to do something about it. So some of those people who said, I don't care, probably they would take action if it was relatively easy for them to do. And the others truly don't care, right? They're just like, not even worried about it, target me. But what really blew me away was about five of these 40 students raised their hand and said, I go on to Facebook and Instagram to discover new products because the ads are so good. Right? In other words, they found out about new products and services they wanted to buy because of an ad. And that ad was just dead on. It targeted them really well or it hit them at the right moment. And they're like, yeah. This is cool. I'm buying new products now. So, you know, again, there's a distribution of all of these different segments, right? You know, we're going to target we're targeting those who are more worried about their time and the convenience. Also, they want to preserve their privacy a little bit better and feel like they're a little bit better in control. So we'll provide that control. But in the moment, we're really looking at the convenience. When we get to the critical mass of our audience, which I, again, could say very confidently is below 1 million users,
yeah.
Then we think we will have a much broader appeal because a lot of consumers would be more than happy to get a free $20 to $40 a year, right? Or $200 a year, depending on their household.
Okay. And we should actually now go back. We've kind of gone through everything in detail right at the beginning. And now let's come back very quickly to the origin story. Like, why did you want to create this and when?
Okay. So back in the mid-aughts, I started hold on, I'm going to move my screen here to get it a little bit better. Okay, it won't go. All right. I was in industry for about 9 years, starting really at the dawn of the consumer internet. So I was the 12th employee at Match.com. I helped build the online dating service. The last thing I did there was implement the billing system. And it was interesting because during that year and a half, there were, you know, kind of rabid debates online about whether consumers would feel safe purchasing things that they saw on the internet, right? So people were saying, no one's ever going to use the internet to buy stuff because nobody will trust it, right? Well, that problem got solved, right? And, you know, I think what happened is, you know, MasterCard and Visa basically said, we're going to absolve the consumer of liability for when they purchase things online, and we're going to basically de-risk it for them, and we'll pass the risk on to somebody else, right? And so then consumers felt, okay, I don't have as much risk here, and the burden's on the merchant. And so away I go purchasing things. And as you know, e-commerce took off, right?
Yeah.
So I went back to grad school for a bit. I studied information economics. And at the time, spam was a real problem. And as I was looking into the economics,
at the time.
Yes, it still is, right? But it was really bad in 2003, right? 2002, 2003. I was running my own mail server at home and I was getting a deluge of spam. For my own domains. And I was like, okay, this is a mess. I'm going to do this. And I was in a great class with a great professor, Marshall Van Alstyne is his name. He runs the InfoEcon stuff at MIT and Boston University. And so great work and very insightful. And so I thought, okay, spam is basically untargeted marketing. And if you could raise the costs, raise the costs of mistargeting, and you could decrease the value, or not the value, sorry, you could decrease the cost of data or information that would allow a marketer to do better targeting, then consumers can now, they will only get, you know, or it will skew heavily towards a message that actually ends up being informational or valuable to a consumer. Mm. And our model, so I started this company, Boxby, and the idea was permission-based marketing over email.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what got me into it. And I left that space. Boxby was sold in 2012, got it to about 1 million users. And then I ended up doing email security for, I don't know, about eight, nine years. Mm. And when I started looking back into this, the consumer space again, I realized, I ran across GDPR while I was doing the email security stuff. And I thought, this is great. Consumers have data rights, you know, a right to get a copy, a right, and a number of other rights. And I just thought, this is great. This could be the beginning of permission-based marketing again.
Yeah.
And so I sought out some people I worked my way. I had a strategy that I started pitching into people at Google. And eventually I worked my way to Scott Spencer, who is my now business partner.
Okay.
And we didn't, we met just briefly. And for a variety of reasons, it's a funny story, but I'll spare you the timing just because it's a bit. He's like, we can't do this right now. Great idea. I love it, but I can't do it right now. And so I went off and did other things for 2 years. Then in 2023, I circled back to it. And I just thought, I really think there's something here. I reached back out to Scott. Scott and I started talking. He had built Google's AdX. Okay, that is the ad exchange.
Yeah.
It was originally the DoubleClick ad exchange.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, this person knows a heck of a lot about digital media and programmatic display advertising, having literally built probably the biggest platform of that world. And he also felt like consumers have been getting kind of a raw deal.
Yeah.
And when you correctly, you know, when you engage consumers and you provide transparency and you do it the right way, everybody can win. And that's when he and I got going.
Okay. And how long ago was that?
That was April of 2023.
Okay.
So we're coming up on basically, 2 years, 11 months.
And have you just released or has it been out? Okay.
All right. Yep. So okay. We had a prototype back in the fall of 2024. We finished raising our pre-seed capital in January of last year. And then we spent more or less all last year, you know, kind of making the prototype into something very real, piloting it with our first 200 users, multiple iterations, then launching in the Chrome Web Store. And then we started pilot marketing to figure out, you know, which segments through which media, you know, how much does it cost for us to create enough awareness to acquire a user?
Yeah.
And so we've been doing that. And then we launched kind of formally with a press release back in January.
Okay. And obviously everything is very, very new, but like final question, apart from the iOS release, what's next?
What's next? So what's next is ramping up our distribution, building more virality, kind of soft nudges into our product. We are considering a kind of a member get a member reward system that will have limited audience, because again, if the first 100,000, 200,000 users, whatever that number is, sub 1 million, but we've got to get the first side of the two-sided network. And so we're going to incent and kind of be loud about it and encourage our users who nobody uninstalls this product. Like once they have it installed and configured, just not having cookie banners is so nice. And we kind of fade into the background. We're a little bit set it and forget it. And so we will probably get a little bit noisier, have some soft nudges and say, hey, you probably know somebody too who would really benefit from using this product. So yeah,
this is always the risk with things like this, though, isn't it? Yeah, I've had this issue with some VPNs recently. It was like, well, I'm paying you for privacy. Why do you keep giving me ads? Well, not ads, but like upsells. It's a delicate line to tread sometimes, isn't it?
It is. And that's a lot of the VPNs, you know, they maybe not a lot. I don't want to overgeneralize, but it means some of them are like, hey, free VPN. Now we're tracking your IP and we're doing cookies and we're selling all this data.
That's a whole other, I'm talking about the non-free ones, right. Which I don't know which is worse in some respects.
Yeah, I mean, it's really ironic. And what I love about what we're doing is we don't have to hide anything. Like we don't actually, we collect no more data than is necessary to operate our service. And we don't share data with anybody else. We only share your ID. That lets somebody identify you when they can try to place an ad. And we don't give any data in association with that ID. It's the ID plus your consent. That's what we share.
I feel like I should very quickly ask before we wrap up, that ID, is that local only or is it also
you asked a question about this. So it's temporarily, you could say it has a time variation in it. So the OD, the extension and the client, the personal consent agent, it calls our back end every once in a while and gets like a new allotment of these IDs. We call them PC maids, private C maids, which is a consumer mediated ad ID is what the acronym stands for. Okay. It's fancy. It just means it's the ID looks like it's rotating constantly. It's always a new number when somebody sees it. But if you are one of our partners, you can actually decode it and get back to the fixed ID for the user.
Okay.
Oh, and one thing. The user can kind of press the plunger, which detonates the ID using the personal consent agent. So if they want to just blow up that ID and disassociate any data that was associated with their browser or any of their devices, they can click on a button and blow up the ID.
Yeah.
Basically, at that point, they get a different ID, which has never been seen before.
Yeah.
Which they and then, they, you know, the ad tech universe starts to track them with that one if they allow it.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So, and just to reiterate, you don't charge anyone. You take a percentage of what?
We only make money when our consumers make money.
Yeah.
Right. So that, and we like that. Our interests are highly aligned with our consumer user
base. Exactly. Yeah. So if anyone is interested, it's rewarded interest. Now the name makes a lot more sense. .com. Yeah. All right. Thank you very much for your time.
Chris, real pleasure today. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to tell people about what we're doing.
And that was the loader of Rewarded Interest. For more on them, head to rewardedinterest.com. For more on the podcast, head to christianscheller.com/podcast, where you can find hundreds of episodes over the years of previous interviews. I have been Christian Schiller. Thank you very much for joining me in the Tech Lounge.